When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to a Tuesday edition of the Churros y Tacticas podcast. I'm your host, Kian Zabani, joined by my equal co-host, Diego Lorin, who is unfortunately under the weather. And that's why we're not going out guns blazing today. We don't want to, you know, shoot a man when he's down already. Let's let him get back up first, get him to full strength so that it can be a fair fight. But an unexpected weekend to discuss. One is, Real Madrid dropping points to Real Betis, which maybe is not too unexpected. It's not an easy place to play. A lot of injuries for both teams. More surprisingly is that with that draw, they actually gained an advantage over Barcelona. And, of course, lost their spot at the league table simultaneously, which Madridistas, as Ewan pointed out on Twitter, celebrated being knocked off at the top of the table.
I love Ewan for pointing that out.
I think the most surprising thing of all is that finally, Diego, a team went away to Barca without shitting their pants. They actually played football. They didn't miss their chances. God, I've been waiting for this day. For 25 years, I've been waiting for this to happen, for a team to actually put their chances away against Barca. Wow, Girona, well done. Hats off to Miguel Gutierrez and the whole gang. Diego, welcome, man. How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm okay. You know what? For the neutral or the Madridista or the anti-Barcelonista, this was definitely a game to enjoy. I thought it was a great display by Michel. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's like a team finally not just matched but exceeded their XG, your favorite stat, and at home at the Montjuïc, at the Lluís Companys Stadium, and walked away with a big fat win, deservedly so. I hope they go on win. Obviously, I am fully on the Girona bandwagon because, yes, my prediction from 2 weeks ago or so is now definitively come true. And that's not because, you know, the win against Atletico sort of like put illusion, pumped a breath of hope back into my state of mind. Like we know that this, in Barca's case, is a lost league. And Girona's put the dagger in that. Yeah. This is not a championship team. No. Let's be 100% real. We're going to finish.
Girona's going to be ahead of the table over Barca at the end of the year?
I said we are not winning the La Liga. I don't know where we're going to finish, whether behind or above Girona. I hope Girona wins this league if Barca don't. And we are not a championship caliber team. Now, you know, we're going to finish the first half of the season. Girona, I was going to call you. Girona, listen, Girona. We're going to finish the first half of the season in fourth best, third place, the halfway point of the season, right? We'll see by then how many points adrift from the top of the league will be. But the fact of the matter is, mathematically, I'm sure we'll be at such a distance that never before in La Liga history has a team come back to win it with an X point amount of difference. It's similar, like the same we were saying last season about Madrid when you guys were, I don't know how many points adrift at the halfway point. I don't know if you remember that.
But yeah, I remember saying that. Yeah.
So again, your question is, do you not think that you'll finish above Girona? Maybe we'll finish second. I don't know. Maybe Vitor Roque comes in, lights this place up. He's a married man now today. Congratulations to Vitor Roque, Tigrinho. Hopefully he'll come as a mature 18-year-old Imagine marrying at the ripe age of 18, signing your biggest, most lucrative, potentially, you know.
Getting married at 18 is, wow.
Already in and of itself. And he's on the verge of stardom.
I mean, sorry? It was like my grandparents, I think, got married at like 15, 16. It was common back then. I mean, now.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, 18 years old. Exactly. Well,
and less so for a Brazilian. So, sorry, go on.
No,
I mean, look, like less so for a Brazilian. That I shouldn't generalize. I mean, I know, as a matter of fact, that I was witness to, this was when I lived in Mexico, that people in Central America, South America generally still have a bit of the older mindset, meaning they're very religious. There's no such thing as fornication before marriage, if you know what I mean. So many kids will marry, you know, at the first. I mean, for example, once a daughter, a woman, a girl, young girl gets impregnated, that's like the guy, whoever got her impregnated, will marry her. Like that, you know, the families will get together like, you guys are locked in. This is a marriage now for life. And it's not the best introduction either to a married life, to the married world, I would have to say. Especially at the age of 18 when you still have so much to discover in your whole life ahead of you as a young adult, both men and women. Am I digging a hole here? Why do you have this smirk on your face?
This is why I asked you to go on. Once you said, especially for a Brazilian, I knew you were going to go down a rabbit hole. And I was like, you know what? You take the mic on this one.
Listen, do you know what it's fair to say? I'm sure the marriage age, the age of marriage in South American, Central American countries. And I say Central America because I saw it. I lived it in when I lived in Mexico, my time in Mexico. Is a lot lower than in the rest of the Western world, like, you know, in Europe or North America. I don't know, but I'll put money on it that it is.
Maybe. I'm underqualified about South American marriage age.
And again, my theory is because they're very religious, you know, no sex before marriage. As soon as they're young adults, it's like, bang, locked in. You guys are getting married now. And at like, you know, 22 years of age, they've already been married 4 years and they have, you know, it's crazy. I mean, and they still have their, and they're still kids. Like that's a crazy thing. Anyway.
That's what happened to you, right? You never had sex before marriage. You were a virgin up until the wedding night.
Well, yeah, exactly. So of course.
So,
but my point is that hopefully he'll come, as a man, a young adult that is more settled down, married, focused, because we know another reputation of some of the Brazilians when they come to Barcelona. The Barcelona nightlife, or Madrid nightlife for that matter, is a fun one for any young adult. All right, I'm done now. I think the hole is deep enough. Have I been racist in any which way?
Let me dig you out of the hole. Reel you back in. Let's talk about football. So, well, Victor Roque is an interesting one because some numbers. Since you said that my favorite stat is XG, it's not, but it's something I look at. Barca are underperforming their XG by 6. And Lewandowski is actually a huge reason of that, which is funny enough that a few weeks ago on the podcast, I said, Diego, maybe the criticism of Lewandowski is harsh. Because at the moment I said that, he was actually even with his XG. So we can talk about all the defensive problems that Barca had. Because that Girona game was about as bad as I've seen a team defend in a long time.
It was brutal.
And, you know, there are these talks, and I don't know what your thoughts on Xavi's post-game press conference was, but, you know, he said some things like, you know, we almost made it 3-3. Lewandowski, big chance. Of course, it also could have been 4-1 at one point. It could have been, you know, and maybe Barca could have scored on their early spells of possession in Girona's half.
Yeah.
But the defense, the bad defense and the lack of finishing is a bad combination. Real Madrid went through this last season. Our defense was really bad and Benzema was not scoring. You remember this? And it was like, well, how the hell do we get out of this? So maybe if we were scoring a bunch of goals and winning games like 4-3, it wouldn't be a problem. But
yeah,
when you factor in that Barcelona are not where they were defensively last season, and also the fact that Lewandowski is missing all these chances, the one he missed that could have made it 3-3, the replay made it worse than I thought it was. So I was like, okay, he misredirected the header, but it actually just hit his shoulder. Like Lewandowski 3 years ago was just putting his whole neck behind that, and that's going in, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a problem. So, like, does Vitor Roque solve some of that? I don't know. I think that would be a surreal expectation to have of a kid coming from Brazil. But certainly he's promising for a reason. And, you know, he's been compared to Luis Suarez in some sense. But, I, you know, even though I don't think he's nearly the link-up player that Suarez was, although, you know, it's way too early to tell. The other question is, will he actually play minutes over Lewandowski? Will that become a problem if actually Lewandowski gets benched in that situation for Vitor Roque? The other thing I wanted to point out is that in years past, when I look at Barca's danger, it's like you guys always had people that I was scared of on the wings that could dribble past you. And I think ever since Ansu had injury problems and left, and then Ousmane Dembele left, like Rafinha never was able to really take the reins on that.
Clearly.
And Yamal is obviously just really young and really raw. And so, and he's not, I mean, even starting every game right now. And I think back to like when Rafinha first signed for Barcelona, I remember saying that, it's okay. It's a good signing, but it's like, I feel like the way that Barca fans were treating it, like he was the next Neymar. He wasn't.
No. You read that wrong. Nobody thought that.
Next Neymar, but there was a lot.
Like, everybody was very skeptical, paying so much of a guy that was playing for a team that was fighting for relegation. There was a lot of skepticism more than Yeah.
Maybe I just remember that one, you know, loud Twitter account or something. I don't know. But, you know, listen, like he's fine though. He's not a bad player to have in your squad. But I mean, like he just doesn't replace what Dembele brought.
And neither does Ferran Torres, and neither does João.
Yeah, different kinds of players. And it's and that kind of goes against what Xavi wants, because Xavi always said he wanted to have like people on the wings who could dribble in a 4-3-3, right? And he's
natural wingers.
I don't think he has anyone like that he can trust right now.
No,
apart from again Yamal, who looks promising.
Who looks promising, but who's also 16.
Yeah.
And like you said, such a raw product. So, and he's been taking some of that pressure off of his shoulders because he started off the season with a bang. And I think to keep him a starter would have been unrealistic. And it's also expecting a Rafinha to be a Dembele type threat is also unrealistic. I mean, look, it's not to say that we were not excited. Clue myself, obviously, with the signing of Rafinha, who I think showed promise, was one of the players that was fighting for the right wing spot on the Brazilian national side. And he's got stiff competition there, of course, with what's his name? The Manchester boy and obviously Rodrigo. But he's not that guy. I think we can all at this point say that it's not as effective enough for him to be that natural winger that he desperately wants and had in Dembele, and why he was so reluctant to let him leave as well. And to turn the focus back also on the other two guys, I think with Ferran Torres, it's más de lo mismo, really. A guy that came with a very high price tag, and it's just not really, like, all these players have spurts, have moments. You know, Ferran Torres was the goal scorer in the season, in the preseason, started off the season also fairly well. Started off the season very solid, came on as a good substitute, scoring, you know, earning him the nickname El Tiburón. All of a sudden he's the shark. And now the shark is underwater somewhere, you know, where's his fin? I don't see the danger. And then João Félix, who unfortunately, and I say this with a very heavy heart, I think is gonna also his destiny is basically the one that we discussed on the last podcast, Kian, where I think Atletico will say, we're not budging. It's 70 mil or nothing. And Barca will say 70 mil for a guy that is most of the time not there. Thanks, but no thanks. Thank you, João, for your services. It was interesting, but it didn't work out. And he'll end up in Saudi Arabia or in the Premier League.
Suddenly, it doesn't look so great that he burned that bridge.
With Atletico?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, I mean, but what it's I don't want to burn this bridge, and I hope he proves me wrong. But I was skeptical of his arrival. He proved me wrong at the start. He started off with a bang, but it's not the sprint; it's a marathon. And I feel that my skepticism is gonna be proven right because, you know, he disappeared. All of a sudden, I was back again. Revered as, you know, one of the protagonists and great promising players in that system. And then we see him against Girona, or I say we see him. I should say we didn't see him against Girona because there was no pressing. There was no presence. There was no nothing on the left side. Unfortunately so. And I fear we're going to see more versions of this than the one that we saw in the beginning of the season against your Betises and, you know, even Osasuna for that matter, or Antwerpen, and Atletico. But I think now, I don't know, man. Look, I've got COVID. I'm not well. These are depressing times. I'm in place right now. So, but that's just how I see his future in particular.
Yeah. And just, I forgot to bring that up at the beginning of the show. You have COVID, and also my son is home with his stomach flu. So we're actually going to keep this pretty short. It's right. Me and him home, and he's just having lunch right now, yeah. But I'm keeping an eye on him, but it's going to be a short one today. But
I hope he keeps that lunch in. Yeah.
I hope so. My God. So the Atletico game was obviously, you can chalk that up to, well, that's the F you guys game. I'm going to play my heart out. And it kind of came back down to earth. I mean, look, he's had a good year, all things considered, even before the Atletico game. So it's not only one game, but the Girona game, there's two plays that stood out to me out of all the stuff that was going on. The first goal that Girona scored was the situation where Barca are keeping a high line. But of course, when you keep a high line, what do you have to do? You have to win the ball high up the pitch, because if you're not, you're screwing yourself over.
Yeah, exposed.
And there's that, you know, there's someone on Spanish Twitter who put out a thread that I saw circulating where he highlights the fact that João Felix was walking around that play. And in fact,
I saw that.
And went over a bunch of sequences where he was just walking around, not pressing. And Barcelona weren't pressing in that sequence. And João Felix was someone that could have potentially helped close that pass down. The other one that stood out to me was on Girona's last goal. It's a free kick. And Miguel Gutierrez, of course, that for Madridistas, part of the celebration was that it was one of our own who, you know, who scored against you guys and did other stuff. And he's just completely unmarked there. And I'm looking at that. This was before they even scored. I'm looking at them like, are Barca just going to ignore his existence? And it almost seemed obvious that I was like,
over here.
Okay, the strategy here is that they're going to psych Girona out, like, of passing it there because they're freaked out at how Barca are just ignoring him. And I don't know if it was Frankie or another midfielder who was like pointing to the defense, pick him up. Even though it should have probably been him tracking. And in the end, they just decided not to do it. And then Girona score.
Yes.
And the other thing, of course, we didn't mention, Diego, is that you guys have individually brilliant midfielders, but you still don't have the Busquets to organize it. And that's hurt. That's really hurt you guys. And there's been no replacement.
Hundred percent correct. I mean, I don't know what to add to that. You know, spot on, my friend. Well, and that's not to say that we didn't have our chances. You know, Yeah, good podcast. That's not to say, and you mentioned at the top of the podcast as well, it's not to say that Barca didn't have our, you know, we didn't have our moments that we could have, you know, Xavi said some things in a press conference that were cringy. And then he said some things that were also factual or truth. You know, the 3-3, I think I agree with him. I have to say, it does rub me. No, it doesn't rub me the wrong way, but hearing things like that, this is a team under construction. I know that he's been catching a lot of heat, a lot of flack for saying this. And although I sympathize with him in any way, because he lost a key player, we talked about how key that wing position is. You know, that winger, natural winger for Xavi is massive. The fact that he has lost so many players to long-term injuries up until this point. Now, of course, Pedri, Frankie, etc. are back. Ter Stegen is still out. Araujo is back, knock on wood. Koundé as well, but Gavi is out. And that's not to put the pressure on an 18-year-old neither, but Gavi, how important is he as intensity? And when it comes to pressing, winning the ball back, he's one of those guys that gives you that, at least that energy and that determination to do so. And that is contagious, as Lewandowski, for example, admitted as well. So I sympathize with him that he has to improvise like any coach does, of course. Those are the trials and tribulations and the pains of any regular season. But then hearing it from the guy that's at the helm saying that he needs to figure things out, like this is still something that is under construction while we're defending champions. It's like, you know, you're like, it's not, it doesn't ooze out confidence, put it that way. And I fear, and again, I'm in a dark place right now, but I'm not sure if Xavi sees the end of the season. Y en español, in Spanish, we have a saying, si va a comer los turrones, si se va a comer el turrón, like if he, then that's another way of saying, like, comer el turrón is, you know, it's at Christmas here during the holidays, we have, you know what turrón is, right? You'll know the sweet, it's like a new, oh, it can be different. It's kind of like nougat or chocolate. It's a bar that you cut up.
It's very
fatty, greasy, deliciously. Mm-hmm. And I asked this question to Andrea when we had him on the podcast. Is there a chance? Do you see this possibility where Xavi no va a llegar para comer los turrones? He's not going to make Christmas. And he kind of, you know, obviously, Andrea Orlandi, the friendliest guy in football, didn't even consider that. But I saw it as a real possibility then, and I see it maybe not for Christmas, but maybe until the end of the season. I'm not sure if Xavi will sit in the Barca dugout until, like, come end of May, if this continues. I think that's, at this point, a reality that he himself knows, because he knows the pressure and scrutiny that Barca coaches are under always. We're fourth right now. We're playing Antwerp. We're qualified for the Champions League, but the first spot is not guaranteed, which is why I'm guessing all of a sudden there's the emergency call-up sheet that came out. I don't know if you noticed, Kian, but we had one come out earlier today or maybe even last night where Araujo, Lewandowski, Gundogan and Frankie were not on it. And today it was like all of those three of those four, except for Frankie, were called up, Araujo, Lewandowski and Gundogan, to travel with the team to Belgium. And because I think, you know, I mean, we don't want to qualify second.
you know? And it makes a huge difference. And plus you get more money if you win this last game too. When Xavi says things like this team is still under construction, I struggle to understand or sympathize with that, or really understand what he meant. Because how long are you going to be under construction for? Because, I mean, this wasn't his words, but if you remember back when the 4-0 Clasico in the Bernabeu, when Aubameyang killed us and you guys killed us, the narrative from Piqué was, we're back. So now you fast forward a couple years later, I think everyone in that moment thought that this was going in a different direction. And of course, last year you win the league title. So what does it mean that you're actually under construction after all that? And if you're under construction, what is Girona? You know, like every team is technically under construction. I mean,
every team technically is under construction. I guess any team that is successful is closer to the finished product as opposed to a team that is struggling. I agree with Xavi when he says we're a team under construction because, hey, this cannot be the finished product. Therefore, by default, it is still under construction.
Right? Yeah, but I don't think he said it that way. I think it was more like, hey, you guys have to remember we're still under construction. I was like, okay, well. Yeah,
well, that's kind of how obviously it's interpreted. But, you know, he has pieces still needing to join. He has pieces that are out, have been out and now for the season. Like I said, it doesn't ooze out confidence. It's not what you want to hear. At the same time, it's clear that this is not a finished product because the football leaves so much to desire that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done still. Hence it being under construction. I'll interpret it that way.
Well, he now has a lower win percentage than Kike Setien.
Wow.
Yeah. Which kind of surprised me.
All his time or this season or like his coaching?
His overall Barca career. Yeah.
Now, Kike obviously had the likes of Messi and he had a much shorter sample size.
Sure.
I mean, Kike Setien will be remembered for Bayern debacle and that kind of unfairly so maybe, but his team, you know, had a lot of individual talent as well.
Well, if he makes it feel any better, Koeman is still the worst winning percentage. I think he's like at 54 something. It's crazy. Oh,
there you go.
We have to wrap it up. I did want to end this on a positive note.
There you go.
Because you and I were talking about Romario last podcast.
Mm.
And just randomly today, I saw this on Reddit. There's a clip of Romario playing football. He's 57 in a league. He's bald, like not intentionally bald.
I've
like
seen
he's
it.
Got like this bald thing. And then he hasn't shaved this part and it's all just like white. So, right, he looks like.
He's very old.
He looks like Abuelo, like straight up.
He looks very old.
He is so good. He's playing in a league. He's nutmegging people, these touches, like no one can take the ball off him. It's so fun to watch. Like, it's incredible. And I'm going to send it to you right now in the chat. It's, you know, I just thought it was interesting because we were literally talking about him a few days ago on the podcast as like, why doesn't anyone talk about Romario? Why is he so underrated? He's literally one of the greatest strikers of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, just today I saw the clip. It was,
I thought you were going to go somewhere along the lines of, you know, Deco and Xavi should ring out to him and try to get him on or something.
No, but
sarcastic and cynical,
but you know, wouldn't be that off brand. Like how old was Dani Alves when you brought him back?
Hey, listen, Romario, I loved Romario. I was one of his biggest fans, so I'll always vouch for him, especially if he's sending me some of these treats. Yeah. I'll have a look at this, man. I'll have a look at this. Here we go. Almost 60. Man.
Yeah,
57. Yeah. He's aged.
There's no doubt. Are you watching it now?
Yes.
Live reaction. Look at some of his touches, man. They're so good.
Let's see. Can I get this to play? All right, come on. Go, go, go.
I want at least one live reaction before we wrap it up. If you can get it to play. Not happening?
It's like stuck on the first frame, but I don't know. Hold on. I'll try to refresh the page once. Press the play button again.
Who do you guys play tomorrow, by the way? Shakhtar, Antwerp.
Antwerpen. Royal Antwerpen.
You're going to be watching.
How aren't you happy?
What are you going to be watching tomorrow, by the way? Oh, you have to watch Barca. See, Real Madrid plays today.
It's not working. I want to see the obviously Bayern Man U. That's what I want to see.
That, and I mean, the other one that's juicy is Dortmund PSG.
Yes, of course, of course.
Those are the two. I might have to split screen tomorrow.
Split screen it. Boy, it's not working.
All right. It's all good. Well, watch it on your own time. Record yourself and maybe we'll play it on the next podcast. Okay. Next podcast is over on patreon.com/churrosytacticas. Our patrons submit juicy questions and Diego and I fight and we answer every single question that is posed to us. And that's where the really raw churros are, unbaked. We barely even mix the dough. It's just some like sugar and flour and we just kind of throw it in the bowl. It's not even mixed. So access that over on patreon.com/churrosytacticas. Are we doing that Thursday or Friday?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which one?
Okay. I don't know.
We'll figure that out.
We'll see.
All right, man. Enjoy. Get right, better, man.
Thank you. Likewise. Much love to your kid.
Thanks, Ciao. Buddy. Peace out. Sports Social Podcast Network.